Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of the Cancer Researcher podcast, brought to you by the European Association for Cancer Research. In this episode, we are touching on the subject of gender diversity in the workplace and discussing some of the challenges that women in science face. I am your host, Dr. Alexandra Boitor, Scientific Officer at the EACR, and my guests for this episode are Dr. Joanna Joyce, Professor at the University of Lausanne, Switzerland, Dr. Marisol Soengas, Group Leader at the Spanish National Cancer Research Center in Madrid, and one of our board members, and Dr. Mireia Crispin Ortuzar, Assistant Professor at the University of Cambridge, UK. Marisol and Joanna are both recipients of the PET Scholar Marina Larcher-Fogazzaro EACR Women in Cancer Research Award. This award celebrates a cancer researcher who has demonstrated academic excellence and achievements in the field of cancer research and who has, through leadership or by example, furthered the advancement of women in cancer research. To find out more about this award, please visit the Funding and Awards section on the EACR website. Hello everyone and welcome to the EACR podcast, The Cancer Researcher. We usually discuss career progression and our guests share advice on how you can improve your research and better your career prospects. We often prize the tremendous advancements in cancer research and often forget that education and research opportunities are not equally available to all. I would like to begin this episode by acknowledging that there are a number of relevant and established areas of inequality within academia for STEM disciplines, including biomedical research. There are significant equality gaps between different racial and ethnic groups in terms of access, success, and progression in higher education, and also in academic career progression, in the tendency to move between academic stages. On the happier corner of underrepresentation, we have the old story of women in research, a subject of targeted interventions for many years. It's undeniable that those efforts were successful, but to what degree, it's still a matter of debate. I have here with me today Marisol, Joanna, and Mireia to further discuss this matter. Hi, Marisol.
Hello. Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Alexandra. Hi, everybody. Nice to be here.
Hi, Mireia.
Hi, everyone. It's really nice to be here too.
So I would like to start the conversation today with some quick statistics about women in research. Even though tremendous progress has been made towards increasing the participation of women in academic positions, according to various statistics, including those made by UNESCO, women are still underrepresented in STEM fields. The latest statistics, which are not quite up to date as many rely on data collected before 2019, show that women still make up only about 28 to 29% of STEM workforce worldwide. If we are to focus on Europe, the SHE figures, which monitor the level of progress towards gender equality in research and innovation in the European Union and beyond, showed in 2021 that women represent 42% of academic staff. Another important factor to take into consideration is the field of research, and biological and medical sciences are thought to be doing a bit better. Unfortunately, I couldn't find recent statistics specifically for cancer research, but I was hoping you could help me with that.
Thank you for the question. I think it's quite important starting from the figures, right? So in terms of cancer research, I can say some, I'm based in Spain, and I also participate in different kind of career development and cancer groups in Europe. And so the numbers are not bad in terms of women started and PhD level. So at least in Spain, in many centers in Europe, we are all even more than women, men, about 65%. I guess the numbers then become more problematic at the high level position, at the level of leadership. And this is, at least in these countries, still around 33%. Numbers are changing and improving, but they're improving very slowly. And that's, I think, what we have to discuss on how to move things faster, I think.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I think, you know, the so-called leaky pipeline, these scissor-shaped curves that have been shown for every single discipline in science in every single country where the numbers of men and women have been compared, this remains to this day still a disproportionate distribution of women and men. So I think the notion that we have heard for many, many years, it's just a matter of time and this will get better. Clearly, that's not the case. I mean, I've been hearing that for nearly 20 years now, and it's not going to magically get better by itself. We have to, as scientists, as a community, we have to actively work to close that gap and to ensure that all of these wonderful women who would want to stay in academia are not being pushed out. That's the challenge that we have.
I fully agree with that. And I speak as someone who currently works in cancer research, but who's actually a physicist by training. My PhD was in particle physics, actually. So it's one of the areas of physics that is more fundamental in nature. Lots of computational mathematics that traditionally has been dominated by men, and it's still the case. I was completely surrounded by men during my PhD, and it was very noticeable. And for me, moving to cancer research was a huge change. So I think I can confidently say that the situation is much better in cancer, but it's still definitely an issue. And one thing I would want to highlight is that I think that the distribution is not homogeneous based on what I've seen. We use these percentages. And so I think that the natural assumption is to think that everyone everywhere has this, whatever the ratio is, that's going to be uniformly distributed. But I think that representation and values around diversity and around, you know, the how you work, what matters as a team, how you conduct your research, can result in really, really different team compositions. So I see how teams that have women attract more women and have no issues around having really diverse teams. Whereas others say, oh, we just can't seem to find any women. And it just, you know, it never gets solved. So I think it's really important to have this discussion, not just on a global level, but also on a team level. What are you doing in your team to ensure that this isn't an issue for you? Because some teams seem to be doing it right.
I think we also have to reflect on what's happening when we talk about the leaky pipe. And so this discussion of we lose women. Of course, we lose some women because they drop to other careers. But I think what seems to happen is that the women shift. And so I think more that the drop is the shift. So many women scientists that start the PhD, they may go to the postdoctoral state. So then they decide, and the decision, we can talk about that, quite complex factors in this. But then to move to careers of mid-level position, or even to leave academia for other positions that still are related to science, and this could be on the pharmaceutical sector, on contract research organizations. So in other positions that we start to see more women indeed than the usual. And that's because academia is not attractive enough, is not paid enough, is not recognized enough. So I think that is also a point that we need to address. And there are studies now, a lot of women now going into publishing, for example, going to even patent offices where, as you say, Mireia, so they feel that there are more women and they may be more welcome. So really, where are these women going? Because yeah, we lose some, but the point is that they don't get to high-level positions.
Yeah, and there was actually a very interesting recent study. It was picked up by Nature and Science. It was published in Science Advances, I think, where they actually came up with a very surprising finding from analysing, I think, thousands of academics in the US over the period of a decade or so. And they found that at the senior levels, at the levels of tenured full professors, that far more women were leaving of their own volition. So they had tenure, they could have stayed until retirement, but they were choosing to leave. And the reason that they were choosing to leave was because of so-called toxic work environments. So this is another really critical issue that many people are identifying. But strikingly, even more so, at senior levels where women say that they don't feel that they've received recognition that they expected. They're not being put forward for leadership opportunities. These types of things that are different to the reasons for the disparities at the earlier stages in the academic ladder. So we, of course, as a global community, have rightfully focused on those challenges and trying to address the difficulty with combining work with life outside of work. And that's extremely important, but we cannot take our eye off the fact that the academic environment also makes a huge contribution. And as Maria was saying earlier, the importance of building your team with diversity, with inclusion, with equity. We hear these words all the time, and they're extremely important for how we create and maintain a culture where everybody feels welcome, feels valued, and is recognized for that. These are simple things that we all would love to have, and we would like to give to the people that we work with.
And perhaps if I may add two more ideas that I think would be also useful for the rest of the discussion. One is around the leadership issues. So I agree with everything that's been said. Another thing I would add to the mix is that there are women who are hugely successful and are in leadership positions and are very visible. And a very, very common thing I found pretty much everywhere is that these women tend to do a huge number of things. They're in every committee, they're in everything that's out there that requires leadership and motivation and ambition. It might be a self-selective issue. It might have to do with, well, we just have two women, so they have to be in all of these things. And so you end up having to do a lot of extra work compared to others, I guess, at a similar stage of the career. I think this is something to think about. I mean, it's great in terms of visibility, but it's a very, very tangible issue, I think, in terms of workload. And another idea I wanted to put out there is related to an earlier stage, so the postdoc stage, which I think Johanna has also alluded to. And I think the issue there is the generic one around the instability of a postdoc. So, I mean, this is an issue for everyone, but I think that it's an issue that also disproportionately affects women. And so I think a lot of the challenges that we've got are, of course, around women, but they are broader issues with how we've set up the academic career.
Thank you for sharing your opinions. And if I may build up on what you've just said, Mireia, regarding the postdoctoral stage and the instability, are there any other aspects of the postdoc instability which, in your opinion, may affect women in research more, apart from the salary scale or the instability of the job? For instance, do you think the fact that you've got limited contracts, like you work for like 2 or 3 years and you don't have a permanent contract, do you think it might affect women more than it affects men?
I mean, I think that lack of stability affects everybody. I think the issue with postdocs is that you usually do a postdoc at a time in your life when you're making big decisions, and that's true of everybody. You're probably trying to, buy a house or live somewhere. You're maybe thinking of having children. And because of how society is set up, and I think that's true for most of our countries, there's usually more pressure on women in many of our countries. Women will get a couple of months of parental leave, of maternity leave, whereas men are only expected to take 2 weeks off, things like that. And when you don't have a stable job, that can be a real challenge. So I think those like traditional expectations around this stage of your career turn it into more of an issue for women. In my experience, though, workplaces that have a good set of policies and a good example around this can be much healthier. So I remember when I started my own postdoctoral research fellowship in the institute I was in, within the first few months, three different male PIs or senior postdocs went on paternity leave for a few months. And that to me sent a really, really strong message saying, you know, this is okay for both men and women. You know, men are taking a couple of months off to take on parental duties, even when they're senior PIs. So if you're a postdoc, and I mean, it wasn't the case for me, but it sent that message to me saying, this is something, this is a reality that is accepted and celebrated in this place. And therefore, it's not something you have to worry about. And so I think that definitely changed the atmosphere around it. But of course, the fact that if you move to industry, you're very likely to get a much better salary and a permanent job is still something that is very hard to fight against.
Yes, I guess I would add to that. I think that it's extremely important, right? Also thinking about the examples that all of us set to other people, people who are our peers, people who are trainees, this is really critical. And I think often we maybe underestimate how important that is. But there are also tangible, practical aspects of this key stage in one's life and in one's scientific life. So just to give an example of something, a program that we've implemented here, it's actually been running for quite some time at the University of Lausanne, recognizing this key career step, the life as a postdoc. So when scientists are on parental leave, they can apply for a grant of up to 1 year from the university that allows them to then hire a research technician. And then that means that they can train somebody before they leave to take their parental leave, and that person can continue the experiments while they're not able to. And that's really critical. And we've seen that in the outcomes. We have the metrics to then see that this significantly contributes to women remaining in academia, of course, if that's what they want to do. Practical measures like this that really don't cost so much and that benefit so many people, the researcher, but also they benefit the technician who's then taking on this role. These are the things that I think we need to implement. And you know, we're scientists, so we need to approach this logically. We need to have the data, and if the data supports the interventions, then we would ideally like to extend these types of programs elsewhere. And maybe this is also somewhere where the EACR can be involved in terms of supporting such initiatives.
I agree, and congratulations for this program. I think I wish all institutes had that. It's true, we're talking about the issues with maternity, paternity leave. So what we've seen in Spain, and actually this is, well, because many women pushed for changes in policy, now the paternity leave is compulsory. So that we thought, well, it's going to make a big change in science because you think, okay, now men will take time off and will be equal to hire women and men. And still, we are not there yet. So there's something beyond just these initial months that you have for conciliation. And we talked about different things. So one is at the postdoc level and then in the postdoc, a more senior transition. And then samples, you mentioned, Johanna, the examples we said. I think this is quite important because still in some minds, we have been, you know, very active in promoting leadership, women in science. Still, there is a kind of perception that there is a type of leader, you know, these women very committed, and it's true. But I think we also need to work hard to just make attractive our profession. And there is, of course, you know, as in science and other fields, different people, different approaches. Perhaps people that get to a high position tend to be more ambitious in the good way. But we have to change also these perceptions of male attitudes versus female attitudes in leadership, because that also puts some women off in terms of, moving and trying to dare to apply. And this is, we know this, issue of not female women that we don't feel confident enough, right? So to put ourselves for promotion or to ask for a promotion also. And even though we have been working, and I think EACR, other, associations in Spain also, we're very active in trying to promote different ways of leadership. I think we still have to work on this. because then it's not very clear to many women that this is an attractive position, not only for the salary, yeah, and it's also for the environment. So I agree with the making the environment actually much more appealing.
Yeah, I think this also relates to this, you know, this very famous quote, you cannot be what you cannot see.
Of course.
And this is, you know, really underscores the importance of role models, the importance of seeing other people to whatever group you identify yourself with, succeeding in a way that you would like to succeed, right? And all too often we see, particularly for leadership, because it's been so entrenched, this is probably the area where we still have to make the most advances. There are sadly still very, very few women leaders. If we want to use the example of cancer research, very few leaders of the institutes in Europe, as an example, very few heads of department who are women. And so this is, you know, I mean, it's called often the glass ceiling or the missing rung, that there are just not the same opportunities for women to be embraced in those roles. And I think this is really a challenge. I don't know if Maria and Marisol, you have answers to this, because often the type of leaders that women have shown themselves to be are very effective in a different way.
Yeah, but I think something in terms of what can be done, right? And what can we push forward?
My understanding is that once women manage to reach leadership position, there are two main types of behaviors. One would be on the more supportive side, where perhaps you can see women aggregating within the same group, perhaps the same research area, and supporting each other. But I've also read that there's another aspect of it, which was titled as the queen bee effect, where women were perhaps older in age, and it was maybe a bit more difficult for them to become successful and climb the career ladder. And they tend to judge younger female researchers rather harshly and have higher expectations from them than they would have from their male counterparts. Is that something that you've experienced or something that you would agree happens today?
I think it happens. Fortunately, it's not very frequent. Because I think nowadays, because women, many of us, we have gone through many situations of maybe not discrimination, but certainly bias or paternalism, or I mean, getting a situation where our CVs are not promoted the way they should. So yes, I have seen this queen bee effect. And it's hard to handle, because now we learned how to address men that, you know, maybe not supportive, but we are less, I think, prepared somehow, at least some people, to address this kind of women. So fortunate that there are few. The way when these situations happen, I think what helps is to be part of associations, part of women in science groups. And then when you discuss this and where you see actions how to navigate this. So to make this perhaps women know that you are supported by others and that you should not, and also to speak about. I think we have to learn ourselves to speak and to, you know, not tolerate actions by men or actions by women that are not fair. So these situations, yes, happen, but hopefully I think they are less and less frequent, because there are newer generations of women that realize the importance of a network.
Yeah, I agree with Marisol. It can happen. As she said, fortunately, it is very rare. My personal experience has been more in the kind of first category, Alexandra, that you mentioned. So the field that I'm in, the tumor microenvironment field, I use this analogy actually a lot, right? That the microenvironment, of course, is critical for cancer, but it's also critical for us as scientists. And this field has attracted, for whatever reasons, many, many absolutely outstanding women who are also great mentors. And I think, at least for me, when I was a young postdoc, I found that very attractive about this field, not just the science, but also this very evident network of women leaders who really, in a very tangible way, support younger women. I benefited from that, and obviously I tried to pay that forward too. And I think, again, as Marisol said, right, we have all experienced explicit and implicit sexism in our careers, sadly. We do not want to see anybody go through this. And speaking for those of us here, at least, we try insanely hard to ensure that young women are not exposed to sexist environments. And I think that that's what we can do, right? We continue to reinforce that message. You are never going to win over everybody. It's just, that's just human nature. But yes, by the law of numbers, there will be far more of us that stamp out this type of behavior and that call it out when we see it. And that will encourage other people to do the same. So hopefully there will be less of these unsupportive people. We again ensure that the next generations also maybe are aware of these challenges. So of course we hope that they don't face them at all, or certainly not to the same degree, but there somehow needs to be an awareness, because we do not want to, when we make progress, then slide back on that. That's something we need to really keep our eye on, because it can be easy for that to happen also.
Yes, I would say that this type of women usually are not a threat for very young investigators, because they tend to be at least show themselves supportive. And it's typically when you get to a certain level, and these are the ones that you have to face. But you say, I think it, what we have to do is to make sure that we call off this behavior.
This has been a wonderful conversation, and it feels like we were just getting started. It's a shame that in the interest of time, we have to bring our conversation to an end for the day, when we only just managed to define some of the issues surrounding the challenges that women face in research and how we could get over it. Thank you very much for the insights that you chose to share with us today, and I am looking forward to continue this conversation in the next episode.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We really hope that you enjoyed listening to Joanna's, Marisol's, and Mireia's conversation, debating the reasons why gender disparity persists in science careers, with cancer research in academia being no exception. We thank them for sharing a few ideas and practical examples that could help promote women in science. I hope you found interesting our chat, and that you enjoyed listening to their opinions on this topic, opinions rooted in their vast experiences as senior scientists and on the statistics available from different organizations and funding bodies. Joanna, Marisol, and Mireia will continue their conversation on this topic in the next episode of the Cancer Researcher podcast on the 6th of March, so stay tuned. Until then, I would like to once again thank our guests for being here with me today, and many thanks to everyone who listened. Please subscribe to our podcast so you won't miss an episode. You can find The Cancer Researcher on your podcast platform of choice. We're on Spotify, Audible, Apple, Amazon, and Google Podcasts. Please do us a favor, subscribe to our podcast and tell your friends about it. You can give us feedback or offer suggestions for other topics or preferred guests through our feedback form, which you can find on our website at www.eacr.org/podcast. That's www.eacr.org/podcast. And don't forget that you can also find us on X at EACR News, Instagram at Hello EACR, and you can search for us on Facebook and LinkedIn.